Okay, Conversations with Linda. This is the time we'll take your phone calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Moulton Howe with us, your phone calls as well. Linda, this mutilation story is unbelievable.
I'm curious if anyone out there in the world has ever heard of something as big as a pregnant registered Angus cow being found with her nose straight down in a small hole where her body is left sort of on a curve. If you look at those photographs in my Earth Files report, they are so extraordinary. And to realize that it's almost as if it were done with some sort of a joke to have the spider webs down in the bottom have been crushed, and the very fact that they're still there and delicate means that that cow didn't have any breath, no saliva. It was dead when it was dropped straight down into that hole.
Well, you know what? There's something bizarre going on here in the first part of that other story where the sheriff deputies believe that something's extraterrestrial. And they're dead serious about that, aren't they?
Oh, yes. I have had so many off-the-record discussions with people in law enforcement who came to the conclusion from their own eyewitness sightings of beams coming out of round glowing objects in the sky. And you couple law enforcement long ago coming to the conclusion that they were not dealing with predators, disease, or satanic cults. That is the mantra that was sort of politically acceptable for everybody to dish out to the media, and then the public would not know any difference. It's not disease, it's not predator, and it's not satanic cults. And that so many people in law enforcement knew that. But then you jump over to the ranchers that I was able to talk to beginning in 79 onward, and at least half a dozen who have seen the beams of light come down into pastures have seen either an animal rise in the beam of light, or they have seen an animal lowered in the beam of light. And in the cases where the animal was lowered, they've been afraid to actually go to the bottom of the beam. They've seen it, and they wait in the morning, and then they go, and there's a mutilated animal. So there has been that knowledge, those specific details going back at least into the 1960s, and we're now in 2013 and evolving. And in the Argentina literature, where Scott Corrales in Inexplicada is doing translations from what is happening there on an ongoing basis. And there have been several cases where people have seen animals either rising or being lowered in beams of light in Argentina.
Yeah.
And we're talking about the hard physical evidence at these sites, where I, for example, carry the knowledge of 34 years of going out and getting with scalpels, cutting mutilation tissue, collecting soil and grass and getting some kind of scientific analysis and finding that these excisions have been hot enough that the hemoglobin and the collagen have been cooked, that we did soil compression tests, and that there's only one way that the animal could be lying in a crater with the soil compressed. It had to have been dropped from an altitude down. And that was one of the reasons why, of the four books that I have out in the world, in the first one, An Alien Harvest, I dedicated that first book to law enforcement everywhere who have looked at the skies and know the truth. That was my dedication.
Good for you. Let's go to the phones. We'll go to Art, truck driving in Arkansas, to get us going. Hey, Art, thanks for calling.
Hello. Yes, that report from Tyler was fascinating.
Sure. Thank you.
And yes, I have been observing these alien drones for 6 years. My sighting has been confirmed, and I don't show them or prove them. with pictures or videos. I actually show them. I use a high-powered laser pointer. And I've wondered for 6 years now, I've wondered what the heck they're doing up there, because there's a lot of them. And I sent you 2 emails to let you know about them, but I never got a response. Finally, MUFON sent 2 investigators, and we went to a lookout point there in Dallas. I wanted them to see the what other aircraft looked like from DFW or Dallas Love Field and stuff like that, helicopters, jets, and all that stuff. Then I pointed out the drones, and they saw them. They're hard to see because they move around very fast, but they did see them. And these are many of them. And now, after that report, I'm beginning to realize that they're part of a, they could be part of a defense network or system here on the planet. They're all over. I see them everywhere I go, and I've seen them in 5 states. And like I said, I sent you a report about it, and but I never heard back from you.
Well, there are literally, I must get several hundred reports every month from someplace in the United States or the world, often with photographs and videotape of objects in the sky. And the problem is how to do what would be considered substantive reality checks on what is happening in all of these cases. It's almost impossible, and I think that's what happens. They just pile up as sightings reports. But I would like to share the one that has always stood out in my memory and my investigations as being almost a pure test, and that was 9/11, when Dick Cheney, the vice president, made sure that all of the airline traffic came down out of the skies and stayed down out of the skies. I believe it was for 4 nights.
Yeah.
And I think it was on the 2nd night when it had been ordered, all airliners, everything was grounded, all planes, nothing was supposed to be in the air at that time. Some friends of mine in Tennessee decided that they would go out with their laser beams and their flashlights and just aim at the sky and see what would happen. And they were scared to death when lights began flashing back at them, not only in a rhythm, but the lights began forming patterns in the sky. And this was a grown adult man and a couple of his sons. And he said it was unnerving because they did it as a lark. And then when they started getting back what appeared to be signals from something in the sky that was reacting intelligently to what they were doing, they went in the house. Now, what in the world was up there at that time of 9/11 when nothing was supposed to be in the sky and could react to people in Tennessee playing around with lasers and flashlights and getting signals back in rhythms and in colors and in patterns that scared them?
You remember, Linda, a few years ago we had that story and you posted it on Earth Files of that strange-looking object that, to me now, probably was a drone. But, you know, it was that picture that thing came out from behind the trees. Remember that one?
Well, you're talking about the 2007 Dragon Tail?
Yeah, that one.
Oh, I mean, I think that's one of the most significant events, and I think it ties directly in to the fact that the government has had all kinds of extraterrestrial back engineering projects, and sure, that the leaked document that Lex got and I got from Isaac. And that was the name he used, along with that document that he released from the Palo Alto Research Lab, PACL, about CARET, the CARET program, which was basically research on back engineering extraterrestrial technology to put it into a commercial form that no one would know that it was extraterrestrial, but the whole goal was to explore anti-gravity and these holographic abilities of this ET technology and find a commercial application. That was in the mid-1980s, according to Isaac. And the fact that this we'll call it the dragonfly drone phenomena, occurred visibly and was photographed in 2007, Isaac himself raised the possible answer that our government was learning how to jam a certain frequency of invisibility, and that the fact that those dragonfly drones, not made by humans, made by something else, were suddenly in that year for only a short period of time made visible in the sky in several places, would be a testimony to our government trying to specifically see if they could reveal them. But you have to also put 2007 in the context that when I started reporting this, that one person in the military, in the Air Force, down in Louisiana, had in 1989 seen one of these things in a hangar that was off limits.
That's a great story.
And I think it was off limits because this wasn't ours. It was something we got and that we've been studying, and that tied into the Isaac release of those documents about the Palo Alto laboratory back engineering this ET technology that would neutralize gravity. And remember, one of those was described as something small that could be even on a suit, and that if you knew how to control it, you would neutralize the gravity of anything around you, which sounds so much like the images that Tyler was getting in his mind from the tall blonde about the construction of the pyramids of Giza.
Let's go to Sienna in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hello, Sienna. You're on with Linda.
Hi. How are you? How are you, Linda?
Hi.
I was just wondering about the situation that I have experienced here in the city of Milwaukee with a lot of the young people here and the college kids. They seem like, well, I'm not going to seem like, I know of a fact they're into something, and their minds are being controlled by some out-of-this-world type power. And in a lot of the apartment buildings here, they're like set up, what you would say, some type of forces here are set up in Milwaukee.
And well, what is it that gives you the impression that there is some kind of mental control on these young college people?
Well, these are people that I know personally. And one, for instance, is my own very own daughter. And as a matter of fact, I saw something unusual about her going on in her bedroom, and it was totally not of this world.
Well, do you want to email me and give me more details off air? And you can email me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com.
Oh, yes. And another statement I want to make about, like, the Jeffrey Dahmer and the area that he was living in. I lived in that area at one particular time, and there is a lot of activity going on. So a lot of the things that he was encountering was like there was something that had transpired within him.
Sort of that idea of the devil made me do it.
Wow, he was screwed up from the get-go. Let me tell you. Strange story. Jeffrey Dahmer, of course, died in prison, killed by prisoners.
Yes, and there definitely is a disease of minds. But I think what she's raising is the question that we are living on such a concocted planet, and that in that concoction, there have been centuries now of influence by something other than human. And at least that is the best educated speculation about our true Earth history and where we come from as a genetically created species, and that everything is beginning to emerge around that theme, and that in that manipulation, you can look through history through a different lens and see manipulation of forces. For example, right now the planet is so agitated and in such chaos, and there's the feeling that we're on the verge of a tremendously violent next step if Syria blows up or something else does.
Yeah.
And that the chaos, the constant chaos in war, could be something manipulated specifically by something that had the intent of pushing humanity into self-destruction. And I think that it's better to look at these and think about these possibilities rather than shutting down and backing away and saying it's too terrible to contemplate, I don't want it to be true. We have to face what could be the possible realities to make ourselves stronger and not so vulnerable to manipulation.
Go to Blair in Sedona, Arizona. Hi, Blair. Glad you got through.
Hey, thank you very much, George. And Linda, I've been listening to your talk about the animal mutilations, and I wanted to bring up the ocean radiation, but one quick comment.
Mm-hmm.
I read Shirley MacLaine's Saging While Aging recently about the Eisenhower meeting with two different ET groups
mm-hmm.
that had proposals, you know, back in the 1950s, and he chose the group that allowed us to keep our nukes and weaponry. So no wonder this is all happening. You know what I mean?
Well, I do appreciate your bringing up this whole question about did Eisenhower meet with non-humans? And I don't think it's been clear or resolved exactly what happened. And now we get into the Hall of Mirrors. The Tyler story, the New Jersey abduction story, and several others, they constantly make me on guard in this respect, that advanced intelligences that can make anything that they want, can mix and match genes, make any kinds of containers, project their life force into them, concoct a kind of immortality by approaching the speed of light and pulling back and all of that. How would Homo sapien ever know what the objective truth is? And that the idea that there is a competition between two advanced groups out there over what is allowable to do with life. One group says we are going to take the lowest of the low and we are going to put our genes in it and we're going to make a new creature and we're going to prove to you that we can take the lowest of the low and make it into us. And something else says that disgusts us and we want it eradicated, and a political war begins about what is allowable to do with life. If that is the huge box that we're all in and something like that is going on, then the Hall of Mirrors is that at every level of human creation and history, there has been deceit and deception. And that is why I think that right now, as we're all becoming more and more aware, we can't be alone in this universe. That's preposterous. And so, with all these threads that have been coming through the abduction syndrome and laid out over this strange, confusing history, as you go back, and even Carl Sagan looking at Sumeria and saying they said that their gods were from... not their gods, but that these the ones that were telling them to build the ziggurats were not from this planet, and that those are the threads that have been woven in front of us in a funny, strange way as evolving humans, but not with any clarity by anyone, perhaps because there is this camouflage. Something is trying to work from the inside of humans out.
We're coming back in a moment, Linda, with you, so stay with us. Okay, well, on our next Coast to Coast program, guess what? It's Friday night. We'll have some special open lines for you when we come back with Linda Moulton Howe, of course. Let's take final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, amazing how the work of Zechariah Sitchin seems to be hitting home with all these various stories that are out there that all seem to echo things that he said.
Well, he was looking at the Sumerian history that Budge and others in the 18th and the 19th centuries, when they could get into Iran and Iraq, they were coming to the conclusion that there was something there that made the roly-poly humans build these elaborate ziggurats and had sort of rituals about taking the fairest virgin up to the top with this communing with the so-called Lord or whatever the word was. And even the archaeologists were raising the questions a long time ago about what was the relationship between the so-called Sumerian gods and the roly-poly humans of Samaria. And it was one of fear, awe. This was clearly, as Sagan wrote in his book, that the humans were saying in their own description that these were from someplace else. These were extraterrestrials that were with them. And that may have been, in some strange way, the most honest relationship between the evolving primate that had become Homo sapien and the extraterrestrials that had made those humans. It might have been Samaria was the one time when they really were cohabiting together, and the humans knew that they were dealing with something that was not human.
All right, back to the calls we go. Scott is in Edgewood, Washington. Go ahead, Scotty.
Yeah, good evening, George, Linda. Absolutely astounding show tonight.
Thank you.
I read an article sometime back, it was maybe 20 years ago, about some scientists that were implanting monkey fetuses in bovine uterus. Now, they weren't successful with that because there's a whole bunch of different hormones and stuff that are necessary for the development. So they failed in that respect. They couldn't bring them to full term. But it occurred to me that with these cattle mutilations, that they're collecting the parts necessary to build essentially a womb in a can, something that could be chemically manipulated to produce the proper hormones at the right time to bring a particular type of fetus to term.
Well, you know,
that's how they produce the grays.
Yeah, there is. There have been lots of speculation along why specific pieces that are taken. And I remember going to the University of Colorado Medical Center and sitting down and talking with somebody who was a geneticist when I was working on A Strange Harvest back in 79-80, they didn't know as much then as they do now, but saying if you had an ear, an eye, the tongue, the esophagus, the trachea, the bladder, lots of internal organs are discovered having been removed by a process that is not surgery as we know surgery, the genitals and the rectum cored out, would there be anything that would make sense to a geneticist? And the answer to me always was, no, you add all of that up and it doesn't make sense to human doctors. But there is something else to consider. At least two complex, detailed cases, both involving two witnesses, two different abductions, one in Florida, one in Colorado. They both involve reptilian type, meaning scales, humanoid in appearance, but with scales and vertical slit eyes, that in front of these different abductees show a cow hooked up on some kind of a table to tubes that are extracting blood from the animal and excisions. And in both cases, that people have come away with the idea that this is being done to produce food for these reptilian beings. So you can, it's like a puzzle on a table. You have some incidents where you say, well, maybe there are reptilian beings and they mutilate for food. And then there are other facets where you get a very strong dose of, they're collecting genes in order to make some kind of containers or to perpetuate the gray androids. that is another big theme that had not been discussed much up until the last 10 years, that the little grays are made by everybody out there, that the little grays are some form, like we would say, if you could make vacuum cleaners that were biological and you could talk to the vacuum cleaners and say, do this, do that, do this.
Yeah.
The same thing would apply to these gray, the little gray androids that blondes can make, red hairs can make, black hairs can make, oranges can make, blues can make, gray, some other form of grays can make, reptilians can make. It would be like the common Xerox machine out there to do work on planet, it would on different planets. And that would mean that on another planet, there might be something that looked like these black-eyed grays, but they would be programmed specifically for the atmosphere, for the gravity, for the temperature, for everything that would be on different planets. So the complexity that is emerging now as we keep moving deeper into the 21st century about what the true history of interaction of terraforming, of non-humans terraforming this planet, having had bases maybe 200,000 years ago, way before any consciousness that Homo sapiens sapien, the current model, Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien, overlapped with Neanderthalus only about 35,000 years ago. And we already have Göbekli Tepe as a complex, highly strange, huge hilltop complex in southern Turkey that is carbon dated to 12,000 years. And Robert Schoch is convinced, along with John Anthony West, that the Sphinx, in its original form of a big, huge lion, is at least 14,000 years old to match a watery time and all of that, those watery rivulets on the Sphinx. And so it seems to me that a couple of things are beginning to collide. One, there's more and more and more evidence emerging every year that the old 5,000-year-old line in the sand has been erased and that there have been things here far more advanced and complex far before then. And the second thing is that the more we have been exposed to different facets of people in the human abduction syndrome who have had experiences with different types of beings, that there are certain sort of bottom lines that keep emerging. And one is, without question, that humanity is the end product, or let's say the current end product, of an evolutionary experimentation by non-humans from someplace else who have mixed and matched genes to produce something, and we happen to be the current model. And then you get these other subcurrents coming from other abduction cases like Tyler and the woman in New Jersey and several others, that there really is a very, very sophisticated political conflict that has been ongoing for a very long time about what is allowable to do with life. And if it's at that kind of big box game, what I was saying before the break is, one of those groups would say, well, the easiest way to prove that we're right and that genetically manipulating standing up primates to create that humanity is disgusting to us because our genes have been used in a lower primate to produce this, and therefore we want it erased. We're saying nobody should do this, so we are going to prove that humanity doesn't deserve to live in conflict to the others who are saying humanity does deserve to live, then working from the inside out, working in the containers of humanity, trying to pull the rug out from under this, we'll call it the noble effort to produce something that was grand, you can see, going back through history through this lens, that a lot of things suddenly come into focus as that now it makes more sense. But I still feel strongly, no matter whether there's some huge wager is a political game conflict between two very advanced civilizations, or the same civilization that split politically, that something did emerge in this evolutionary end product of Homo sapiens sapien that is extraordinary, and that the soul spirit of humanity is extraordinary and is definitely worth saving. And for us to destroy ourselves because something is manipulating us from the outside would be a tragedy. And so let's not do that.
No. Let's go to Gary, first-time caller in Terre Haute, Indiana. Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Actually, I've talked to you before. It's an honor to be able to. And I apologize to your guests. I've not really been listening to the show much tonight because I've been watching a UFO. I'm a night watchman in a secluded, abandoned industrial area way, way out in the country. And we're not too far from an airport, so I'm very used to seeing planes. And I have believed in UFOs for about less than a week. I always said, I'll see it, I'll believe it. And I've got to tell you what I've been seeing. It's been amazing. For 2 hours, I've been watching this. I'm still watching it. As I sit here, there's an orange ball. It's brighter than any other star. It resembles a star. Somebody passing by would think, it's just a star.
About that size, right?
But I've been watching this hover go up and down, left to right, for 2 hours. I spotted it last Friday morning also. But tonight, as I was talking to my girlfriend, I mean, I'm sitting on a hill staring at it, so I can't ignore it. I saw another one appear below it, and it hovered up towards this ball, like almost like it went inside it and just disappeared. And this ball is going so slow, because my girlfriend said, why isn't anybody else seeing it? And I said, well, anybody else would just think it was a star if they weren't just sitting on a hill staring at it like I am.
And where are you exactly?
I'm not too far from a place called Farmersburg, Indiana. I'm south of Terre Haute, Indiana. It's extreme western Indiana. And it's still in the sky. It hovers very slowly. It goes up and down, left and right. Like I said, I'm used to seeing airplanes. There's nothing that moves like this. And it's been going on for about 2 hours. And I saw it again last Friday morning, first time. And me and my girlfriend, she's in L.A. And so we talk late, and it's just like, I've been telling her, it's just like, you got to see this, sweetheart.
Well,
when one ball appeared and went up to it, that just freaked me out. And I'm going to give you
Peter Davenport's website, too. You should report this to him. UFOCenter.com when you get home. UFOCenter.com. We're getting lots of reports, Linda, around the country of these plasma ball-looking objects all over the place.
That's right. I've been seeing a lot and lots and lots of reports to me by professors and professional people who are hearing very unusual low, sometimes of the rumbling booms. They are rattling windows. It's as if whatever that phenomena is, it is continuing. It's hitting in various different parts of the country. And I am interested in what this gentleman is describing, because I remember when I was working on A Strange Harvest with the crew, we were with Leo Sprinkle for a while, and then we went out to a rancher's place where there had been several mutilations. And while the crew and I were setting up the camera, the rancher said, look, there's one of those, and he meant UFOs, right now. And it was a bright tomato red light, and it came up slowly, a little bit like the rising stars at night. And it hovered over a ridge where there had been several animal mutilations. And then with the cameraman, the audio man, the rancher, and myself watching, this bright tomato red light went straight down back behind the ridge. There is nothing astronomical that comes up and stays and then goes back down from where it came. And that very same night, reminding me of what you're describing, when we were standing out looking straight up, we weren't running a camera, we were just looking at the stars, and all of a sudden, three of us saw an orchid-colored light move almost like you would say the way you might see a distant satellite, but a very unusual color. And it stopped right at the zenith. All three of us saw it, and it was the color that was so unusual. And through, we stayed up until the sun came up, and that orchid light that we all three saw move into that position was there when the sun came up. And that's what you're describing in Indiana of the orangish-red light moving in tandem with something else. I've had so many reports from the Toronto area in Canada about something like that and other places, and why there are what appear to be orchestrated, almost coming together or sending off a mission, like it looks like something has come in, gotten an order, and leave. There's that kind. And then there are these lights that appear to move. People see them, and then the lights pretend, I'm using that word, pretend to be astronomical. And I know my own experience that something stopped, looked like a strange orchid star, and it moved into position.
Something's going on, Linda.
Oh, it's going on for millennia, and now there's a little bit more consciousness. We're beginning to become aware that we're not only on a petri dish being studied, but maybe we're getting close to finally meeting some of the concoctors and manipulators of this planet.
Maybe so. Linda, we're rapidly running out of time. A lot of people still on hold for you, but we'll have to get you back next time as well. Any speaking engagements coming up for you?
I will be in the first week in November in Pittsburgh at the MUFON conference there, and I'm going to be doing a very interesting presentation that begins with Göbekli and goes further into this whole issue of the terraforming evidence on this planet. So for those of you who are interested, go to earthfiles.com, and at the top of the headlines page is information about that. And I look forward to coming back and sharing more on Coast next month.
Absolutely. Then we'll talk. How about you and I need to email each other about your holiday schedule, too?
All right.
Okay. We'll do that. Thanks, Linda.
Thank you.
Linda Bolton Howe. You need more information on her, it's earthfiles.com, and you can always email her at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. As for me, George at coasttocoastam.com as well. For Nathan Staten, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Timothy Banal, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, John B. Wells, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.